This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchar, between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to be talking about through the next hours. The Championship is back this weekend after the international break. Our focus this afternoon will be on Nottingham Forest, Blackburn, QPR and Derby. We'll also be giving a general assessment of all of the fixtures over the weekend. Want to get in touch this afternoon? Call us on 0208 70 20 558 or you can WhatsApp us on that very same number. This is the Championship Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about over the next hour as the Championship action is back this weekend. A bit like the Premier League, fans out there, are you delighted that your club is back in action, or are you worried about what might be coming, whether your manager is at threat? Nathan Jones is still at Stoke. I pretty much say that every single time, and still he is the Stoke manager. It is remarkable considering he seemed resigned to losing his job, but as it stands, he is still in possession of that job. Just one thing from the Premier League, interesting about the young players, that a study has come out to say that game time for English players aged 21 and under at Premier League clubs is at its highest level in 12 seasons. English under-21s have made up 5% of minutes played this season, which beats Germany, which at 2.28, and Spain at 2.61. So it does back up this opinion that plenty of young players are getting an opportunity at Premier League clubs, and there are plenty of exciting young players that we've been talking about the last few weeks in the Championship. One that I'm sure we'll talk about later in the hour when we talk about QPR is Eberechi Eze, who's made an impressive start to the season. It's all too easy for Eberechi. Looking at the Championship fixtures as a whole, then, it gets underway tonight at the Cardiff City Stadium. Cardiff hosts Sheffield Wednesday, as we've been saying throughout the week. Cardiff manager Neil Warnock is not particularly happy with the fact that they have to play a game straight off the back of the international break on the Friday night. Neil Warnock is always good value for money, always says something rather intriguing. Then on the Saturday, Blackburn host Huddersfield. That is the early kickoff. Then at 3 o'clock, Barnsley take on Swansea, Brentford against Millwall, Charlton play Derby, Hull against QPR, Leeds take on Birmingham, Luton host Bristol City, Middlesbrough play West Brom, Reading are at home against Preston, and Stoke host Fulham. And on the Sunday, it is Wigan up against Nottingham Forest. We have a WhatsApp in, and it's to do with our Premier League predictions. I say it's the favourite section of the week, and it most certainly is. And we've got James Howard, who often comes on to talk all things Crystal Palace. He says his WhatsApp in is loving Charlie's prediction on Crystal Palace. As we all know, he gets the Palace predictions wrong every week. And I can see into the control room, producer Laurie is absolutely delighted with that WhatsApp in. Thank you very much for that, James. I'm sure I'll be getting a message from Charlie within probably the next few seconds about that. But you've had a public shame in there, Mr. Hawkins. Someone thinks your predictions are absolutely awful. You may give Laurie grief, but you haven't had a WhatsApp in saying your predictions are absolutely appalling every single week. As I said, the prediction section is always the favourite part of my week, not just because I'm winning, but it just creates so much debate. And we have it in the office. It's so funny, some of the comments that people make, especially the banter that myself, Laurie and Charlie have, because the fact that Laurie got 0 points one week is a point that I'm sure we'll be making every single week of this Premier League season. Let's turn our attention back then to the Championship. One of the sides right near the top of the table are Nottingham Forest. And I'm delighted to say we are joined now by Baz Cooper, journalist at the Nottingham Post. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Baz. Last time out before the international break, it was a 1-0 home win against Brentford. Was it Forest's best performance, like manager Sabri Lamouchi claimed?
Good afternoon, Kieran. I think they played very well. It was on the face of it, I think to people looking outside in, a 1-0 victory doesn't look that comfortable. But the way that Forest dominated the game, the way they kept Brentford at arm's length, it was very, very controlled. I think they've been getting better and better and better, actually, which augurs well. I think, obviously, we've said previously on this show that the amount of players that they signed over the summer, given and also that there's a new manager in place, it was always going to take time for them to gel. But I think they have been getting better and better as the games have gone on. And I'd certainly agree to an extent that they were very good against Brentford, for sure.
What have you made of Sabri Lamouchi since he came in? What were your expectations when he came in? And what do you think he has brought to Forest in such a short space of time?
I'll be honest, I didn't really have too many expectations because, like the majority of people, I wasn't... I know he was linked with the job. He was offered the job previously and he decided it wasn't the right time for him. But I can't say that I'd followed his career massively closely. The best memory I've got of Sabri actually was when he played in the UEFA Cup at Forest for Auxerre, and also in 98 I had a Corinthian figure of him and many other France players for the World Cup. But I think what he's done, he's galvanised a group of players that I think weren't doing a great job under Martin O'Neill and Ita Karanka before that. I think they've he's added, whether it's how much is his involvement and how much is other people at the football club, scouts and various other people, but the players they've added throughout the summer have largely been successful. But what I think he's done, I think he was a player himself to a very high level, as we just alluded to, and I think he understands the game. I think he also makes it very, very... he doesn't overcomplicate it. Like some managers maybe ask their players to do too many things on the pitch, to think too much. Maybe it's not clear enough, as daft as that sounds. And I get the feeling from when you listen to the players talk about his methods, certainly in training and the instructions that he's given, are very, very basic, very clear. But sometimes that's all it needs. It doesn't need to be overcomplicated. And I think I genuinely believe this, that the players enjoy playing for him.
As it stands, Nottingham Forest are in second. They're on 22 points, the same number of points as top of the table West Brom. Does that completely come out of the blue? It's a complete surprise that that is the case. Or were there even kind of, there were some fans that thought, if we can just get a little bit of confidence in the game, just a change of manager might get the best out of this squad. And it was a squad that was better than last season proved.
I think every supporter of every club has you know, designs on being successful. Forest have been unsuccessful for an awful long time, as everybody knows now. So there's always that hope and expectation going into a season. But the new ownership that took over the club 2 or 3 years ago, Evangelos Marinakis, Nicholas Randall, and various other people that are now involved in the running of Forest, they make no mistake about it, they want Premier League football. Like a lot of other clubs, though, that's what their target is. So Sabri was never appointed as manager to get Forest into the top half and, you know, challenging for the top six. It's to get Forest in the top six. You know, Ita Karanka did a very good job at Forest, you know, to a point, and they were challenging in and around the top six when he left. So that clearly wasn't good enough. They want somebody to get them into there and get them into the Premier League. So while expectation was tempered somewhat, I think recruitment was, you know, on the face of it, recruitment looked okay. There was a question mark. You have to say there was a question mark. They signed Sami Amiobi on a free transfer from Bolton Wanderers, a team that had just been relegated to League One. So, but Sami's coming with a point to prove on a year contract, and he's been excellent. In fairness, there's one or two other players that have nobody could have foreseen the impact that Michael Dawson and Joe Worrell would have when Worrell came back from Glasgow Rangers. Matty Cash playing at right back owing to an injury for Carl Jenkinson. He's playing out of his skin. The re-emergence of Ben Watson, of course, goes back to his old club this weekend at Wigan. There's so many variables in that Forest side that it would have been impossible to have predicted that it would be going quite as well as it is so far. But we are only 11 games into the season, so let's not get too carried away. But it's been a great start for Forest, and you know the next five games up to the November break look, certainly on paper, very favourable. The next four, especially before they face Derby in the fifth. But you know, the Championship's a difficult league, isn't it? So they can't take anything for granted, and we are still only in mid-October.
looking, before we talk about those games ahead, as you said, a favourable run for Forest, how does expectation change now for the club? Because they are currently sat in second, but on joint number of points with West Brom on 22. But will Sabri Dumuci be wary of perhaps raising expectation levels too much? Because as the Championship always is, you lose a couple of games, Forest could be in about 7th or 8th place in 2 weeks' time. So how much has the expectation changed amongst Forest fans?
I don't know if expectation has changed massively. I think excitement is there's all, look, as I said before, there's always huge expectation around this football club because of what it's achieved previously, albeit an awfully long time ago. So that's natural. And when, even last season, the takeover 2 or 3 years ago, as I say, kind of did raise expectations to another level because they suddenly Forest were being run as a football club again and not as a circus, as they had been prior to that. So when they're going out and spending £6 million on Lewis Grabban and £13 million or so on João Carvalho, that is going to raise expectations. But more than expectations, I think fans are just enjoying the positivity. I think they're seeing their players go out there and give absolutely everything for the shirt. Yes, you know, at Charlton away, they might not play particularly well, but they've come away with a point when, not too long ago, I'm not saying they'd got hammered, but they certainly would have got beaten there. And there's other games. Leeds away is another one. Blackburn away is another one. Barnsley at home, they somehow won the game after not playing particularly well, and Barnsley were far the better side on that day. They've won the game. And I think the fans are just enjoying being towards the top end of the table and, you know, going to games feeling that they've got a chance of winning it, as opposed to, you know, dreading visit. You know, for years and years and years, Forest fans have dreaded away trips because their away form has been absolutely diabolical. Whereas now, if they win at Wigan on Sunday, that's four away wins in the season already, and that's not a bad start. So, yeah, the expectations are naturally going to increase if this form continues. But I think, as I said, moreover, they're just enjoying the fact there's something to be positive about out on the pitch, and results are decent.
And just finally then, Baz, as we mentioned, the run of fixtures looks pretty favourable for Forest after Sunday's trip to Wigan. It's home games against Hull and Reading, then away at Luton. Without kind of Forest fans getting too far ahead of themselves, this is like an opportunity to maintain their position right near the top and continue this unbeaten run they're on at the moment.
Well, it's a great opportunity, isn't it? We were talking about this in the week, that when you compare the fixtures before the international break, from the start of the season through to the Brentford fixture, they were very, very tough on paper. Fulham away, Swansea away, Leeds away. There's some difficult games in there that they've safely navigated. And let's not be mess about here. The West Brom game, they didn't play particularly badly. And yeah, West Brom won 2-1, but that was largely down to two goalkeeping errors on Forest's part. So even that defeat is kind of tinged with a bit of, well, it could have been a lot different had the goalkeeper not made a couple of errors. But yeah, look, historically, and for everybody connected with Forest, you know, those of us that have watched Forest for a long time, covered Forest for work as well, will know that these are the sort of games historically that Forest have struggled in. And we've said this before. We said this before the Blackburn game. We said this before the Preston game. We said this before the Brentford game. But, you know, Forest have a habit in previous years of going to the so-called better teams in the Championship and winning. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, they went to the season that Wolves got promoted, and they won 2-0 there and completely dominated Wolves, played them off the park. And that was the year that Wolves dominated the Championship and got promoted. So they've shown historically that they can turn it on, you know, at big stadiums, you know, when there's maybe not so much expectation on to go out and force the issue. But their problems lie in games that they're expected to win. Wigan is a prime example. They've been there 7 times since 2003 and they've never won a game. They've drawn 5 of them, but they've not won there. And that kind of, I guess, symbolises Forest's record against the so-called lesser teams in this division. So the challenge for them really is to take it. It's a cliche, isn't it? Of course, take one game at a time. Don't focus on the fact that they've got Hull and Reading coming up, you know, Wednesday and Saturday at the City Ground, two really, really good opportunities at home. Focus on Wigan, respect Wigan, because Wigan, I think, have lost once in 15 at home, once in 14 at home, I think, in the Championship. And that's the best home record in the league. The only time they've lost was against Leeds in August, I believe. So, you know, that, just because Wigan are down at the bottom, it's their home form has been superb over the years. So, take nothing for granted. But yet, as we say, yes, it is a great opportunity, the next four or five games, especially with Derby coming the fifth one of those at the City Ground before the break. It's a real good chance to cement that place in the top two, top six. But as we know, as you said yourself, Kieran, they could lose at Wigan on Sunday. They could get a draw against Hull on Wednesday night, and suddenly they're down in seventh or eighth place, and they're back into that pack again. So you can't afford to take your foot off the gas. And what I would say is Sabri Lamouchi is only too well aware of that, and he won't take anything for granted. And I'm sure he won't be letting his players take the foot off the gas one bit.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Baz. That was Baz Cooper, a journalist at the Nottingham Post. It's been a very good start to the season for Forest, a real surprise package for me at the start of this year. But as he mentions, it is a very favourable run over the next four games. But if they lose a couple of games, the next couple of games that you'd expect them to win, they lose them, they can suddenly be out of the playoff positions even after that. So things can change very dramatically if you lose a couple of games. That's the nature of the Championship, especially this season. It is so, so close in the top half of the table. Not many points cover first down into about 10th, 11th, 12th place in the Championship.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Blackburn now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Ryan Hildred, a Blackburn podcaster. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ryan. Blackburn 14th place at the moment on 14 points is the way of summing it up. It's been a rather indifferent start to the season.
Yeah, really indifferent, really up and down actually as well. Not a good start, losing the first two like we did, and then we seemed to hit a bit of form with a couple of wins, and then we were eyeballing that Luton game in September, the end of September, to think, right, let's go on a little mini run, and came crashing back down to earth really, and finished the last little spell before the international break with the worst performance of the season away at QPR. Very well beaten. And two long-term injuries sustained in the game as well to two defenders where we're already light. So, yeah, very indifferent, very up and down and firmly in mid-table at the moment.
Well, I was going to ask you, Ryan, on your views of that game, a high-scoring affair when Blackburn lost 4-2 away at QPR. Were there things that came out of that game from your point of view that were rather worrying signs for Blackburn? Or was it one of those kind of nutty games where kind of whether you win or lose, you just kind of draw a line under it and you move on?
Yeah, I mean, defensively is obviously the worry. I've said before on a couple of your other shows that in the summer we didn't really address some of the fundamental defensive issues in my book. We could have done with a good, solid, you know, few million pound signing to shore up the defence, and we didn't do it. So we started the season already looking a bit light in defence, and things like persisting with Elliot Bennett at right back, for example, who's doing a good job, but you know, he's not a right back, you know, we prefer him further up the pitch. So already very light, we get the two injuries in the game and concede four laughable goals really at Championship level, you know, really worrying signs that now with these two injuries we're going to just have to really fudge our way through until Christmas, because Lenihan's out for 8 weeks and Cunningham's out for the season. So two people who would have been starting in defence who no longer are starting now. So yeah, defensively, big concern.
As you mentioned, Greg Cunningham has torn his anterior cruciate ligament. Darragh Lenihan is out for 8 weeks. What does Tony Mowbray do in the short term? Obviously, we're not in a transfer window, so until January, he can't bring anyone else in. So what are the kind of short-term fixes, the solutions to maybe not thrive defensively, but at least kind of plug gaps for the time being?
Yeah, I think the one I'd go for is a slight change to the formation and go to wing-backs just to shore it up a bit. I mean, we've got Tosin Adarabayo from Man City on loan, who has been behind the pecking order, behind Williams and Lenihan so far this season, who should be able to come in as a like-for-like for Lenihan. And then Ryan Niambi, the young right-back, hasn't really played much this season either, who actually did a really good job for Namibia at centre-back in the African Cup of Nations. So if we can kind of go Williams, Adarabayo and Niambi as the three centre-backs, and then maybe push Elliot Bennett to a right wing-back and Amari Bell as a left wing back, I think that hopefully would give us a good basis to to just, as you say, plug the gap defensively until we can do something in the window, and whether Lenihan's come back by Christmas or not.
One man that's been brought in on a free transfer over the last few weeks is Lewis Holtby. Obviously, Tottenham and Fulham fans will know him reasonably well. What sort of an impact has he made early doors since he signed on a free transfer? And is he the type of player that Blackburn can start to rely on as much as they do the likes of Bradley Dack, who's been impressive for Blackburn for a number of years now?
Yeah, he's made a really good impression. He seems to have slotted in really well off the pitch. Even before he signed for us, he had all the fans stringing off his Instagram account with saying, is he coming, is he going? So seems a really likable character off the pitch and seems to get involved in all the banter on Instagram from what I can see. On the pitch, he's made a good impression whenever he's come off the subs bench, getting on the ball, getting stuck in. I think the Reading game, when he came off the bench, he'd made the most tackles and interceptions or something daft like that, and he'd only played 15 minutes. So, real positive impact. Whether we will rely on him as much as Dak, I'm not sure, because I think we orientate the whole team around Dak. We really do gear ourselves up to get the best out of him. Whether we're going to do the same with regards to Holtby, I'm not so sure. He may end up making an impact, as I've said to you before, on other shows, if we end up selling Dak. I do see Holtby as a short-term replacement for Dak whilst we figure out what we might want to do longer term. But no, early signs have been good from Holtby and I like the look of him.
And just finally, then, looking at tomorrow's game, it's the early kickoff, 12:30 at home against Huddersfield, who started to get a little bit of momentum under Danny Cowley before the international break. How confident will Tony Mowbray be of picking up all 3 points?
I think at home he's always confident. I think we've had a fairly good, we'd probably like a few more wins at Ewood Park, but in terms of getting beat, you know, we've got a fairly good record at Ewood Park under Mowbray. I think the defensive injuries are going to concern Mowbray somewhat. As I say, would not surprise me if he changes that formation. I actually know the Cowleys pretty well because I live in Lincoln, so I've seen all of the the fanfare around Lincoln City and what they've done for that club. So I'm expecting Huddersfield to just get better and better as the season goes along, as they get their methods along. So I think Mowbray will be quite respectful of Huddersfield, actually, you know, with our defensive problems plus the wave that I think they will start riding now. I think we'll bolster that defence and go for wing-backs to just be really certain of ourselves.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ryan. That was Ryan Hildred, Blackburn podcaster. It's been a rather inconsistent start to Blackburn's season. They've got a number of defensive injuries. How will Tony Mowbray deal with those injuries over the next few months? Call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We'll be back after this.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or you can WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking a little bit about QPR now, who we talked about Nottingham Forest a little bit earlier, about how they've been a surprise package. For me, QPR have been a little bit of a surprise about how high up they are up in the table. Let's get the views of our next guest. We're going to talk to Gav Lawson from Range of Things, the QPR fan show. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Gav. Does it come as a surprise to you that QPR are currently in ninth? They're on 19 points, only 3 points off top of the table. Is that a surprise to you?
Hello, mate. I think it's a surprise to all of us, to be honest. It probably won't be a surprise to a lot of Brentford fans who saw Warburton do a similar thing at Brentford. But we didn't really know what to expect when he came because he's had a good record, but he's also been not given a chance at a few other clubs. And having signed 14 new players and sold our arguably two best players, I think we all thought it was going to take a lot longer to gel than it actually has done. So, after the first game or the first couple of games, we could really see the type of football he was trying to play. And it has been a massive surprise to see everyone come together and gel so quickly as a team. So, yeah, I think we're all quite surprised.
Before the international break, it was a 4-2 win at home against Blackburn. We were just speaking to a Blackburn podcaster saying that QPR were miles the better side. One man that scored in that game was Eberechi Eze, who's now scored 4 goals and picked up 2 assists. How exciting a young prospect is he?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, him and Ilias Chair, I would say, are both very exciting. We saw glimpses of what Abira can do. When Holloway brought him in the season before last, and he just did need a bit of nurturing, and I think he needed a manager that was going to believe in him and be able to put him into a system that he could play in. It's a bit of a lazy comparison, but you know, similar to what Warnock did with Tarabt. You know, he put other players around him that are going to win the ball and give him some protection and kind of just let him gave him a bit of freedom to express himself. And he's not been a surprise package at all, because we all saw glimpses of what he could do, but he's stepped up this season and he looks a very good player.
Two players that have also been in pretty fine form for QPR up front are Naki Wells and Jordan Hugo. Wells has scored 6 championship goals. Jordan Hugo scored 6 goals in all competitions this season as well. How impressive have they been, and did you expect them to have kind of this volume of goals by this point in the season?
Well, I think we all saw what Naki could do last season in the first half when he came down, and he was, he just brought a lot of running, a lot of energy to the team, and he knows where the goal is. For one reason or another, after Christmas, the whole team sort of fell apart last year, it's been really refreshing. I was very excited, to be honest. Out of all the signings we've made, he was for me the most exciting this season, because we all saw what he could do. He clearly wants to play for the club. With Hugo coming in, I mean, between him and Wells, we've got over £15 million worth of strikers between the two of them. I think our gain is definitely Burnley and West Ham's losses at the moment. So I think at Championship level, they are, you know, they're phenomenal. Whether or not they're able to cut it in the Premier League, remains to be seen. But no, I mean, we're very, very lucky to have them. And I think Warburton pulled off a masterstroke bringing them in.
Up next then for QPR, it's an away trip to the KCOM to take on Hull. Mark Warburton has a full strength squad to choose from as he targets a 6th win in 8 league games. Is this the type of game that you look at and think a good opportunity of an away win, or are you perhaps slightly more cautious than that?
Well, any season before this one, we've said that we've got to be cautious because it's away, and we normally win 3 or 4 games a season away. We've already won 3 this season, at least, 3 away. So looking at it, we should get something from it. We don't tend to draw games these days. We just win or lose them. And looking at it, if Grant Hall comes back, which apparently he is fit, that will be a massive, massive bonus, because the defence does look suspect when he's not in it. I mean, it looks prone to mistakes anyway. But he's a big one. It'll be interesting to see if Amos comes back into the side as well, because he looked very good, I thought, before he went out. So, as you said, a full-strength squad, and we're all raring to go. I don't see why any reason why we can't pick up 3 points. And then we've got 2, on paper, very winnable home games as well. So who knows? But having said that, you know, it is QPR, so we could easily get no points out of the next 3 as well.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Gav. That was Gav Lawson from Range of Things. Remember, you can catch the QPR Fan Show here on Love Sport every Tuesday evening between 9 and 10 o'clock. That's the QPR Fan Show every Tuesday evening here on Love Sport between 9 and 10 o'clock in the evening. We're going to continue looking ahead to some of the championship action over the weekend. Plenty of interesting games to look at. And up next, we'll be talking all things Derby.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Loughborough Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Derby now, and I'm delighted to say we're joined by Owen Bradley, presenter of Rams TV. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Owen. Last time out, it was a 2-0 home win against Luton. Do you think that Derby is starting to get a little bit of momentum after a bit of a rocky start? It started well in the first weekend of the season with a win at Huddersfield, then went through a bit of a shaky period, but does it feel like things are starting to look up again?
Yeah, afternoon. It certainly feels that way, doesn't it? They very quietly, Derby, especially given everything else that was going on, they went unbeaten from international break to international break, 5 games unbeaten. And they went into the last break off an awful defeat at Brentford that followed a bad defeat at Nottingham Forest. So the contrast of that to go into the most recent international break, 5 games unbeaten, and with that victory over Luton, back-to-back home wins. Philip Cocu finally got his first home victory over Birmingham at the end of a bonkers week. And, you know, one victory can change the outlook entirely. So all of a sudden, Derby are within 5 points of the playoffs. They're just shy of the top half of the table, and things feel very different. And they would certainly hope that they can continue that run of chance tomorrow.
A couple of months into the season now, Owen, do you think we're starting to see an identity form under Philip Cocu at Derby? And how does that identity compare? How is it different? How is it similar to Frank Lampard's style last season?
I think we're slowly starting to see it. I mean, I think Derby actually lacked identity for me at times last season under Frank Lampard, because what Frank Lampard was able to do was identify and bring in three fantastic young loan players, two of whom have since gone on to be called into the England squad for the first time, and in Mason Mount's case, you know, played for England as well. So, you know, they don't have Harry Wilson anymore, they don't have Mount, they don't have Fikayo Tomori anymore, they don't have the players that they can turn to for a bit of magic, which is what Wilson and Mount always provided. And actually, at times last season, some pretty average performances were masked by those moments of magic, and they got them results where, you know, Derby didn't necessarily deserve them at times. They don't have that anymore. I think what you are starting to see now under Okoku is a bit more of a pattern of play, maybe a bit more of an identity. He's had to sort of change things quite a lot, in part because, you know, he's arrived late and still trying to, I think, get to grips with exactly what he's got, but he's had plenty of injuries to worry about. He's had the other off-the-field issues as well. It'll be interesting to see what happens against Charlton with Graham Shinney, who hadn't been involved at all in the league since arriving from Aberdeen in the summer. And then he makes his home debut against Luton. It was absolutely what Derby needed, and he won the fans over with a couple of bone-crunching tackles. He was man of the match, got the better of his brother. So, you know, all of a sudden he's come in, and, you know, I'll be fascinated to see if he continues. But, you know, Cocu is slowly starting to get there with them. Liam Rossini, actually, one of his coaching staff, made the point that they are seeing improvement and development of players, you know, day to day on the training ground. And that's what Cocu is. He will improve individuals, and that should translate to improved team performances as well. But it's never going to be as swashbuckling or as sort of edgy seat stuff as it was in the Lampard, simply because those sort of players aren't here anymore.
Do you think it was unrealistic to expect Cocu to, in his first season in Championship football, get Derby into the playoffs like they have done for a number of years over the last four or five seasons? And do you think, in one sense, Frank Lampard was perhaps very fortunate to be in a situation where they were able to loan in Mason Mount, Fikayo Tomori from Chelsea, and then Harry Wilson from Liverpool, that maybe made things, or it would have done, but it made things a lot easier and perhaps masked some of Frank Lampard's deficiencies as a manager?
I mean, I've probably been a little bit harsh. I mean, he wasn't fortunate in the sense that, you know, they were here because of who he was, and he was able to get them. That's why they were here. And then he used them effectively to, you know, get Derby 90 minutes from Wembley. I mean, Frank Lampard did a very, very good job at Derby, and he's showing already at Chelsea, you know, his qualities as a manager. And I've no doubt he'll continue to go from strength to strength. I have to say, I'm not sure I ever expected Derby to challenge for the top six this season. And so far they haven't. But there are signs now that, you know, maybe they might be able to turn things around and start to push up the table a little bit. I don't know if the manager necessarily expected to come in and challenge immediately. A lot's been made of Philip Cocu and the fact that he's developed young players, brought young players through the fold, and he's already given some debuts out this season. And already young players have played some important minutes for Derby. And I think that will continue. And, you know, he signed a four-year deal. He's here to develop and build something, which is what the owners talked about wanting quite a lot, which is what a lot of the fans have talked about. Now, then you get to the reality of the situation, which is fans want to be winning matches and competing for, you know, top two, top six, playoffs, all the rest of it. And it's quite difficult to marry those two expectations, really. Supporters saying, on the one hand, we're patient and we'll wait, but on the other, you know, we want success right now. So, you know, he's getting there, and I think he'll continue to get there. And you know, it's quite an exciting time for Derby. You know, on the youth side, I'm at the stadium tonight because there's a game against the Everton in the under-23s. Derby is second in the league, which is incredible. And the under-19s are in the Champions League. They've got the second leg of their opening tie of that on Tuesday night, a game which we're covering as well. So from, you know, that side of things, it's quite an exciting time for the football club, and the hope is that Cocu being there will start to give more of the talented players that Derby have got at Moor Farm a chance to come through and be part of it.
There's been a lot of rumours over the last few weeks and months about a potential sale of Derby. Now, it came out about a week ago, some reports in the media suggesting that Mel Morris had turned down a £50 million bid. He was looking for or holding out for £60 million. Is there any truth to these rumours about potential bids coming in? And do you think Mel Morris is actively trying to sell it, or is it a case of if you were to blow me out of the water with an offer, then that's when I would start thinking about potentially selling?
Well, as far as I'm aware, in regards to the specific claims about £50 million, £60 million, that was sort of dismissed by the club pretty much immediately. In regards to, you know, other speculation about the sale, the owner's been quite open and quite honest. Since the day he bought the club, really, he said, if somebody comes in and offers me something for the club that puts the club in a better position, and they are in a better position to take the club forward than I am, then I'll sell, because I want what's best for the football club. It's not about me. And he's been quite open about the fact that he's been looking for outside investors, either to come in and join him or to maybe take on the club from him. But he's been consistent saying that he won't do a deal that's good for him but not good for the club. Like, he's not just going to take somebody's money and then, you know, wash his hands of the place, knowing that he's selling to, you know, a bit of a cowboy. So, I think it'll be a bit like Newcastle, really. There's a lot of stuff you see in the press where, you know, speculation about this deal or that deal, but ultimately you won't know that a takeover is happening until it's happened. That tends to be the way that it goes with takeovers of football clubs, really. When you see stuff flying about in the media, it's really to try and generate interest and maybe generate a bit of a competition and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think if someone came in with a very good offer and they had the right intentions and they, you know, could show the owner that they were going to look after the football club, he'd say, best of luck, I'm always here if you need a hand, off you go. But clearly, he's not had an offer that suits him just yet.
And just finally, then, Owen, up next for Derby tomorrow afternoon, it's an away trip to Charlton, who made a very solid start to life in the Championship. They've got a few injury problems of their own. Lyle Taylor is still out for them. Are you confident that Derby can go and get 3 points at the Valley tomorrow?
I don't know about confident. I mean, I've always enjoyed trips to the Valley with Derby. And as you said, they made a really good start. Actually, quite the schedule is that Derby will see Barnsley and then Luton and then Charlton as, you know, three consecutive fixtures. And certainly out of the three teams that have been promoted, they are the ones that have seemingly adjusted the best and have started the strongest as well. I did wonder, when the speculation was that Frank Lampard was going to go in the summer, whether Lee Bowyer was a manager that Derby might look at. When all the speculation was going on about his position at Charlton, I've got no idea if they did or if that ever got anywhere. But he was just the sort of personality that I thought might have rise to the Derby job. So I'm really pleased to see him doing well. Derby have Christian Bielik now, who was Charlton's man of the match at Wembley for the playoff final back in May. So that's, you know, another little added slice to the game with him going back to the Valley for the first time. So I won't say confident, but if Derby can just continue their unbeaten run, I'd be very happy with that.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Owen. That was Owen Bradley from Rams TV. Looking ahead to that game for Derby tomorrow. It's away at Charlton, and it did feel before the international break that Derby was starting to get a little bit of momentum under Philip Cocu, starting to forget some of those off-field issues that have dominated the headlines for the wrong reasons for Derby. Let's not forget as well, in January, a certain Wayne Rooney will be on his way to Derby. Or did Colleen Rainey take this sting too far and actually Wayne Rooney isn't joining Derby? That was another of these stories that she got Rebecca Vardy to leak that wasn't actually true. Who knows whether Wayne Rooney does turn up in January at Derby.
This is Love Sport.